Blazor WebAssembly with Toy Wright.
The Azure DevOps Podcast is a show for developers and DevOps professionals shipping software using Microsoft technologies. Each show brings you hard-hitting interviews with industry experts, innovating better methods, and sharing success stories. Listen on to learn how to increase quality, ship quickly, and operate well. And now your host, Jeffrey Palermo.
Welcome to the show. I'm Jeffrey Palermo, your host for helping you and your teams to move fast and deliver quality and run your software with confidence in Azure, all while using everything that the .NET ecosystem has to offer. The podcast continues to be sponsored by ClearMeasure, a software architecture company empowering .NET teams to be highly effective and able to deliver world-class results through its ClearMeasure Way for Effective Software Teams methodology. And also a side announcement, my architect forums are going strong. Signups for the next session are up, and if you lead a software team and are looking to collaborate with other peer architect leaders, just go ahead and sign up at the link in the show notes, and we'd love to see you there. And for those of you who are looking for my Programming with Palermo video podcast, just search in any of the directories or on YouTube, and you'll be able to find it. And my guest today on the show is Toy B. Wright, and she's an independent consultant who's been working as a software developer for over 25 years. She has a bachelor's in computer science and engineering from the Massachusetts Institute of Technology, MIT, and also an MBA from Carnegie Mellon University. And she's been a Microsoft MVP since 2005, and she's also an ASB Insider. Ms. Wright is the author of two editions of Blazor WebAssembly by Example, with the most recent book just coming out. It's a project-based guide to building web apps with .NET, Blazor WebAssembly, and C#. And she's also the author of many other .NET books and training courses. She was also the organizer of the original We Are Microsoft Charity Challenge Weekend. You can find the original one at wearemicrosoft.com. And that was the precursor to all the Give Camps that have been going everywhere. And she's also the original founder of the Dallas ASP.NET user group. And she's been involved with various user groups around Dallas since 1994 and has been running one or more user groups since 2000. And she most recently helped organize the new Geeks in Pink group. And this group supports women in technology. Toy, welcome to the podcast. How are you?
Oh, thank you. I am excited to be here.
Yes, yes, yes. Finally got you on.
I know.
And congratulations on the publishing and second edition of your book. And that's a lot of work. So great job there. Where can people find the book?
You can find the book anywhere great books are sold, Amazon, or you can buy it directly from the publisher at Pact Publishing.
Pact. They do a lot of technology books. So, well, that's great. That's great. I want to kind of ask you about Blazor and the state of it and WebAssembly, because you had to go super deep to get the second edition of the book published. But before we do that, for those who maybe not be in the Dallas area or have seen you speak anywhere or whatnot, as they kind of get to know you, are there any memorable moments in your career that are kind of transformative or steered you in the direction of so that you're working on Blazor WebAssembly, or you're generally working on web applications? What are the big career moments?
I would say what got me into web development was I was a retail software developer writing Delphi for Windows apps. Mm-hmm. And I was working at Texas Instruments and in the calculator group, basically. And I was the person who was writing the bit because all the calculators interface back to the PC. And because it was retail software development, it had to be perfect before we could release. And this was in the days before, you know, you just go tell people to go to the internet and get the update. It had to be perfect. What we burned on that CD had to be perfect. And it was very stressful. And what happened was I ended up writing an app, a web app for a European, the division for calculators, it was in Europe, mm-hmm. because they needed to keep track of all the different versions of the calculators that were being introduced in each country, because each country actually had different calculators. And it was amazing because when I needed to make an update, I just updated once on the server and bam, right? I mean, I had a database backend and I just updated and everything was gone. And it was magical to me. And from that moment forward, I was like, I am a web developer now. I instantly went and got a different job. And when I was full-time web development, was it for me.
So these were the TI 84 or what, some of the TI calculators?
Yeah, 73, 92 plus, 89. I also worked on the handheld organizers, the Avago.
Wow. You know, that is a very different, that's a very different environment where you have to ship software and you don't get another chance to fix a bug for a long time.
Yes. Yeah. It was very different and unique. I mean, now you obviously, you just tell people to go get the latest version off the internet. But back then it had to be perfect. A lot of testing.
Right. Yeah.
And you didn't actually know what people had installed already on their PCs as well. Mm-hmm. So sometimes we had to put patches so that it would work with the version that we needed. It was a lot of work to get it to work on anybody's PC.
So just curious, was it the PC interface software, or did you also write some code that landed inside the calculator?
I did also write the assembly and worked with all of that as well. But that was primarily just because I needed something updated to work with what I was writing as far as the interface.
Mm-hmm. Gotcha.
So yeah, I did dabble in assembly and all those kinds of things as well. Well,
that's but more than
mostly I've never done that. Delphi.
Okay. Well, kids today
but
are still
using. When I went to internet, I used Visual Interdev. Remember?
Yes. Yes. For web, for HTML.
It was the HTML editor. I started with classic ASP. Yep. With Visual Interdev, and that's when I fell in love with it. And just whoosh, the rest is history.
Yeah.
Because I started doing .NET, and then ASP.NET came on the scene, and I just was obsessed with ASP.NET. And that's when I decided I wanted to attend a user group that focused on ASP.NET. However, there weren't any mm-hmm. in Dallas. And I tried to get other people to start one. And then one day someone from Microsoft called me up and said, hey, Toy, would you like to meet at Microsoft, you know, once a month and have a user group, which was not my intent mm-hmm. to actually start a user group because I was actually already running a user group. So I ended up running two user groups, one on second Tuesday and one on fourth Tuesday for 3 years.
Nice. So twice
and
a month.
So I continued. Yeah. Yeah. I continued to do that until I had my second child.
Yeah.
And then I went down to one user group.
Well, that's a good leadership lesson that if you're looking for something and you don't find it, maybe you need to start it.
Yeah, that's a lot of why I've started a lot of different organizations and that I've started.
Because you couldn't find the one you were looking for.
Yep.
Okay.
Yep.
So you've done every flavor of web application technology from Microsoft since the mid, late 90s. So with this latest generation, there's actually plenty of options still out there. What is it about this Blazor version of web application technology on top of .NET that really captivated you, that you said, you know what? Yes, I like this enough. And I think people need to know it enough. I'm even going to write a book about it and two books.
Well, I mean, I like you said, I cycled through. I did the classic ASP and ASP.NET and web forms and then MVC. And I mean, I bought a lot of courseware on MVC. And what got me was be able to do, make, you know, write a SPA single page application because they're so, you know, like they have that native feel to them. You're not reloading the whole page.
Yep.
And then also it gives you the opportunity to be able to use C Sharp, you know, on the whole application, mm-hmm. right? All your, validation and all that in C Sharp. So I don't know. It's like the pendulum of the JavaScript was getting, you know, with all the SPA frameworks were so JavaScript. And it's like, mm-hmm. I like to come back to C Sharp.
Yeah.
That's my center, I guess. I come back to C Sharp, even right. though obviously you still use JavaScript, even with Blazor,
mm-hmm.
but not as much.
Right. Because you don't have to.
Yes. What? Yeah. You don't have to.
I've heard other people say, and I wanted to see if you agree with this or it's a different reason that it's not that I don't know JavaScript, but if I have a choice to write, you know, a few lines of code in JavaScript or write those same lines of code in C Sharp with all the tooling that's available in both and whatnot, I just prefer to do it in C Sharp. Is it a different reason for you?
Yeah. I mean, with all the context switching we do as, you know, full stack web developers, it's nice just to be able to be in one language as long as possible and not have to switch.
Mm. Yeah, that's a good point.
You know, we're doing so much with the DevOps, all that whole family of tools, and SQL Server and, you know, database, whatever your database is, all those tools. It's a lot.
It is. We've gone down that road with object relational mappers as well. It's like, okay, I could write the SQL, but look, here's a tool in C# now that can write the SQL that's pretty darn close to what I would have wanted to write anyway, but I can stay in C#.
Right.
Yeah. I think that's powerful.
That's what I said. It's kind of like my center. I just keep going back to, you know, trying to use C#.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm with you. Okay. So the second edition of Blazor WebAssembly, what's new?
Well, the first one was .NET 5 and this one's based on .NET 7.
Okay.
So what I did was I added some chapters. I updated the existing chapters, but then I also added chapters that people were interested in because people wanted more information about debugging, which is key to successful development. So I did add a chapter on debugging. I added a chapter on deploying. So how would you actually deploy it? And I also added a chapter on security. So how you can actually secure your Blazor WebAssembly app. And those were primarily like I added three chapters.
Yeah.
And then the other chapters I updated.
Okay.
And ended up adding, you know, quite a few more pages.
Well, the debugging story has gotten a lot better over the years. If people are...
Oh my gosh. Yeah. That's why it wasn't even in the first book, because it would have taken a book to cover debugging. It was so raggedy.
Well, for people who tried, I guess it was in what, late 2000 when WebAssembly came out, server-side came out. And then a few months later, the first weird version of WebAssembly came out, but the tooling wasn't ready. And so if everyone's having or if you're listening and you have a first impression, can you contrast what it used to be like with what it is now? Just for those people that might have just set it to the side.
Definitely. If you tried it back on the, you know, the first version that came out, you definitely want to try it now because everything is better. It's integrated. Everything. I mean, the one thing I would say that I experienced a lot using Blazor is when I set out to do something, I program it and then it just works. Mm-hmm. And that's one thing I really like about it, you know, because a lot of tools that I've been using, especially in the last 6 months from other providers, they don't work. But I would say that what I like about this is, you know, you program it up, you compile it, you put it out there, and it just works. And that's what I want.
Mm-hmm. So,
and that's been, I mean, the first iteration, it had some flaws, but now I think everything's been, it's worked out and fixed.
So for people who are used to maybe WinForms or WPF debugging inside Visual Studio, what can they expect now using Visual Studio and debugging with Blazor WebAssembly? Does everything work or does some things not?
Everything works. I mean, I show you how you can debug through Visual Studio, but you can also debug in the browser.
Mm-hmm.
And between those two forms of debugging, I can't think of anything that you wouldn't be able to debug.
That's powerful because Visual Studio debugging has always been really good. I mean, the watches, just great. Everything. Yeah. Visualizing every bit of memory and variable contents. So that's awesome.
Many thanks to our podcast sponsor, Clear Measure. Clear Measure is a software architecture company that empowers clients' development teams to be self-sufficient, moving fast, delivering quality, and running their systems with confidence. Whether starting a new project or developing new technologies or techniques, Clear Measure sets up your team to deliver world-class results. Learn more at www.clearmeasure.com. Clear Measure, empowering software delivery. Clear Measure is also happy to be a sponsor of the video podcast, Programming with Palermo. Watch, learn, and program alongside Chief Architect Jeffrey Palermo. Videos are added weekly and available on syndicated locations supporting video podcast or by visiting palermo.network. Tune in today.
Jump over to security, which I still see a lot of questions there, but you got just general ASP.NET security and some of the things that are built into the box with any ASP.NET project, but are there specific things that are in a Blazor project that people need to think about when it comes to secure web applications?
Well, the one thing about a Blazor app that you want to think about, or Blazor WebAssembly in, you know, in this case, is you are actually running your app, you know, in the browser, and you are sending your DLLs are down on their browser. So that's something you want to be aware of when you're creating these apps. So basically, you are going to have a backend somewhere if you're going to, if it's, you know, going to be a responsive app, and, mm-hmm. and you want it to be able to access the data. The data is going to be somewhere else. Mm-hmm. You're going to have security in order to access the data because it's going to be on a server somewhere. And so that's basically what I used to use, like what's built into the template. They use the identity server in mm-hmm. the templates that Microsoft provides. But now that they've moved to a pay model for that server, mm-hmm. I went ahead and for this book, I went ahead and used Azure. So Azure AD or Active Directory mm-hmm. is what I use in the example for the book, just to show people how to go ahead and do that and implement security.
Gotcha. Okay. Well, with WebAssembly, we can't directly call a database because we're over on the browser running in there.
Yeah. All right. Yeah. You're going to call a web API. Right.
So with web APIs, what's necessary for securing those? Is it really secure out of the box, or do we need to think about anything? Can other third parties come and call those web services if they somehow decompile the WebAssembly application and see what those URLs are? Or how does that work, and what do people need to think about?
Well, I mean, we're using tokens. So we're going through the AD and using the access tokens in order to verify who you are so that that's how we can secure the backend, just like you would secure any web service. Mm-hmm. It's the same. I mean, you can use a web service that exists now and connect it to your Blazor WebAssembly application as far as being able to access the data.
Okay. So nothing extra that people need to think about.
Or no, it's just web service.
Okay. Do you know the state of the component vendors out there for WebAssembly, and do all those components work in the WebAssembly version, or what's
that? There is some exciting stuff. I mean, I think personally, you know, a lot of the there are still developers out there with the web forms, especially in enterprise. And I have seen that as, you know, just a few months ago, I was at a client and I was surprised to see a web forms app in production. And I'm thinking that the way that it's being developed now with the third-party components and being able to drag and drop them, because, I mean, WebAssembly and Blazor uses its component-driven, mm-hmm. is that that's going to be an on-ramp for a lot of those developers to make that switch finally and to get some of those applications updated. I mean, yeah, when you look and see at what the third-party components look like, there's some pretty cool stuff out there. I'm not personally using them yet because for the book, I wanted it just to be, you know, the components that are provided by Microsoft. So it's not mm-hmm. assumed that you're actually paying for anything.
Yeah.
So you can complete all the different projects in the book without any other, you know, anything that costs money. Everything's free because you can use the community edition of Visual Studio to complete all the projects.
Yeah.
And I just wanted to make sure that people be able to do that. Because they're mostly people are just interested in learning about Blazor. And then what's nice in the book is each chapter is a standalone project. So it's kind of different. A lot of books build and they keep adding to an existing project. And at the end, mm-hmm. you have a big project. So for this book, each chapter is its own little project.
Okay.
That way you can do it in any order. So say I'm interested in authentication, I can just jump to that project, do that project, and I understand it. Or I'm interested in event handling, or I'm interested in whatnot. You know, dependency injection, say. I just read the chapter on that, I complete that exercise and that project, and then I have a hands-on, you know, experience with that. And that just gives you a little more freedom.
That's a good point. You don't have to go in order and then realize, I didn't do chapter 3, so I'm missing something.
Or what I try to do sometimes is I just care about what's in chapter 5, and I just try to do that exercise, but I get lost because I didn't understand something that they had implemented back in chapter 4, or, you know, or why they had done it that way. And it makes it more complicated when I'm really just trying to learn one, you know, one interesting kind of feature.
Okay. Okay. So what is your favorite hosting model for running this online? Is it just Azure App Service? Is it, some people are talking about throwing these WebAssembly apps in Azure Static Sites, or even on, you know, discount ASP.net. What are your thoughts about that for people who haven't even put one of these in production?
I would say App Services, but I think, yeah, there's like the first, like there's a demo where you can use Static. I think it's one of the demos, but what I really do is I usually have a VM and I run it off there. But it depends on just, you know, the scale and your bank account. How you want to handle it as far as you're, you know, hosting it.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't.
So App Service is kind of the go-to?
Yeah, I think, I mean, that's an easy way to get started. And then if it builds, then you could use something else.
Gotcha. Okay. What about if people are going through the examples, do they need full Visual Studio, or does VS Code work for Blazor WebAssembly applications? What's your opinion on that?
Yeah, they can use VS Code. So what I made the decision in the book to go ahead and make all the examples with Visual Studio.
Mm-hmm.
And so, because there's a lot of screenshots, a lot of, you know, you do this menu and whatnot. And so if you want to be able to follow step-by-step, because it actually is a step-by-step guide, it literally tells you, you know, click here, click there, then you need to get the community edition of Visual Studio. But yeah, you can use another IDE if you want to. And probably you wouldn't have a problem following along. But if you want to have explicit instructions, then you do need to do the Visual Studio.
Gotcha. So, and for people who maybe read the first edition of the book, do they just need to read those additional chapters, or have other material things been updated?
All of the chapters have been updated and they've all been added. Each chapter is probably 10, 12 pages longer. So yeah, there's updates to, you know, you need to read all the chapters that you might be interested in as far as the topics are concerned, because they've all been extensively updated, let's say.
Nice. Okay, so this was updated for the latest version of .NET, and November is coming fast and furious with .NET 8 is coming out.
People keep asking me about the new Blazor that's being, worked on.
Well, yeah. Okay. For the new Blazor and for .NET 8, what's the thing that you're looking forward to the most for this next big release?
Well, I mean, I know the name is in flux. I mean, they've been calling it Blazor Unity, or Blazor United, actually. That's what they're calling it. And the idea being that within one application, you can designate certain components to run server-side and certain components to run in the browser. And you can label them as such. And that gives you the flexibility to, you know, obviously gives you a lot of flexibility to determine, you know, where you want those to be run. And I think that is going to be really exciting to play with.
Mm-hmm.
Because, within one application, there are certain pages and whatnot that's like, you know, obviously they're static and stuff. So
yeah.
Yeah. You know, I don't need them to download everything in order to be able to produce that page. And then some, just gives you so much flexibility as a developer to be able to manage the site.
Haven't we seen that with other JavaScript SPA frameworks, where it literally every page is part of the SPA framework? And so even the about or the contact us page has to spin everything up and wait for a little bit and then pop phone number address. Where did you think? Well, shoot, it's just a static page.
It's like just static information, guys.
Right.
So, the book is Blazor WebAssembly, but because we're kind of talking about Blazor Server as well, where, you know, stuff, because that's what we're talking about right now as far as Blazor United, right?
Yeah.
It's kind of combines the Blazor Server hosting pattern. And then we have the Blazor WebAssembly, which is what the book is on. So I'm kind of, you know, if I do another book, would I just do Blazor? Because now you're kind of in both worlds.
Mm-hmm.
Because on the server, you're just obviously just rendering the HTML with Blazor Server, as opposed to Blazor WebAssembly, where you bring everything down to the browser and then the app actually runs in the browser.
So if people are trying to get ready for .NET 8, knowing that this United model is coming, should they, right now, should they be veering towards Blazor WebAssembly or veering towards Blazor server side, or does it matter?
It doesn't matter, but I'm going to say Blazor WebAssembly, and then you can buy my book.
Okay, what about, well, we'll get your opinion on this. With Blazor server side, we might do a component, but then in that same call stack, we call out to a SQL Server database or a blob storage or something that's available right there on the server. But if it was in WebAssembly, well, now we have to kind of hop over into our data center, into the cloud firewall in order to get to that database.
Yes, that's true. That's, you know, where the complications start coming in. Or if you want to use local storage on the browser.
Yeah.
You're not going to do that with Blazor server.
Yeah. Without using a JavaScript shim.
There's trade-offs. But like you're saying, within one website, you're going to have different areas, right? And different, each area, you know, some may require the power or the running on the browser. And some may just, you know, like you're just saying, some static stuff, pages and things.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
That really don't change that often. That are all, you know, maybe almost static.
Yeah. Well, this is hugely exciting because like you, now I did not use ASP Classic version 1. I came onto that in 97. I think by that time it was ASP 2. And it was on what? I think IIS 2 on NT4 server or something like that.
Yeah.
But, and that's, I think that was, it inherited, I remember, it inherited that %% code nugget syntax. It inherited that from IIS's internet database connector technology that came before Active Server Pages that nobody's heard about. But finally, with this, what I've seen the demos of Blazor United is, it looks a lot like Active Server Pages. Well, I mean, Razor Pages is kind of that too, but where, hey, this is just static. It's just server rendered. I don't need to do anything except kind of the Razor page model. And I can integrate, I don't know if there's a page or a section of the page that's just plain Jane. It could be content or it could be maybe a single if statement or something. It's still dirt simple.
Yeah, right, at the component level. Yeah. I mean, it's still in flux. I mean, what I've seen as far as Blazor United, even the name is in flux. Well, I don't know what the current name is today. That was the name last month.
It's not going to be that. Although I'm not sure the Microsoft marketing people have as much say in names as they used to. We'll see.
Yeah.
We'll see what it is.
Blazor and then just some number.
Right. Exactly. Exactly. Okay. And before we go, before our time expires, just kind of looking out and predicting, you know, 5 years down the road, or it's probably hard. It's hard to even look at 10 years down, but 5 years down the road, what do you think the quote normal .NET application is going to be with all of these choices? And then you got Maui, but then Maui is wrapping Blazor. And then and now you got ASP.NET, which is not just for the web anymore. Cause now there's a desktop version kind of wrapped up with a WPF wrapper, but it's all Blazor anyway. But are we continuing to diverge on the types of .NET applications, or do you think that we might be coming back together to a normal?
Oh yeah, I think we're going to be converging, and especially with the assistance of AI, that you'll be able to have your vision of what you want your app to do, and then the AI will just spin it up. I mean, within 5 years, for sure.
Do you think that it will generate the full code, or do you think that maybe we'll take the GPT instructions and store those in the Git repository?
Ooh. That would be interesting.
I don't know, it's an answerable question.
But the prompts, you're talking about storing.
Yeah, the prompts.
And then the prompts.
Right. Well, if you think about it, with code, we put people decide what computer instructions to issue, and then we put the instructions into source control. And when we change the instructions, that's a Git commit. Well, if the instructions are GPT prompts, wouldn't it be logical that becomes versionable?
Yeah. I agree. I think that that could be part of the vision of the future for sure. Because just like kind of like, you know, I'm thinking entity framework, you kind of, you know, code first and then bam, there's your database.
Yeah. I mean, think about it. Who,
and then who, it's the same thing, prompt first. It'll be prompt first development.
Well, if we have a machine generating code, do we want a machine to generate code that then people have to maintain afterwards? Aren't there a lot of horror stories about that, right?
Isn't that how it works now? The code generation systems that we have.
Well, certainly. But I mean, there's been a huge revolt against code generation too, right? So anyway, but hey.
Yeah, I think it's a great time. My son, he's going to be a senior in high school next year. And I think he's going to be coming out. It's going to be an amazing time.
So he's going to be a programmer?
He says he's going to get a PhD in computer science.
Ooh, all right. Very cool. Well, congratulations on that. Huh? Successful launch coming pretty soon. So, well, anyway, congratulations on your book, second edition coming out. Thank you so much for coming on the show. I appreciate it. And sharing with us all about the latest in Blazor WebAssembly. Thank you so much, Toy.
Thank you.
My honor. And until next time, keep shipping.
You've been listening to the Azure DevOps Podcast, a show for developers and DevOps professionals shipping software using Microsoft technologies. Go to www.azuredevops.show for show notes and other episodes. On behalf of your host, Jeffrey Palermo, and our sponsors, thanks for listening, and may God bless you.